Just a quick note up front, this episode does include a few mentions of sexual assault, and we wanted you to be aware before we begin. It's 1:40 a.m., and we've just gotten done watching the 62nd Grammy Awards. Billie Eilish swept the night's four biggest categories and won five Grammys overall. But two major news events cast shadows over the ceremony: the death of NBA legend Kobe Bryant earlier in the day, and a scandal inside the Recording Academy, which includes allegations of vote rigging and sexual misconduct. I'm Stephen Thompson. We're talking about the Grammy Awards on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With Capital One, a new savings account earns five times the national average. That's five times more savings toward that overdue home addition, or maybe even an addition on that addition. Capital One is helping you earn more towards your savings goals. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One N.A. Member FDIC.
Welcome back. Joining us remotely is NPR reporter Anastasia Tsiolkas. Hello, Anastasia.
Hey, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
So we have a lot to go over on this episode. I do want to start by acknowledging the death of NBA legend Kobe Bryant. Earlier in the day, Sunday, Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter Gigi were killed, along with seven others, in a helicopter crash. Kobe Bryant played for the LA Lakers for 20 seasons. He won five NBA championships. He set scoring records. He was an 18-time NBA All-Star. The Lakers play in the Staples Center, which is the venue for this year's Grammys, and the loss hit the room hard. In the performance that kicked off the Grammys telecast, Lizzo offered the first of many tributes.
Tonight is for Kobe.
Now, Kobe Bryant had a complicated legacy, stemming in part from a criminal case in 2003 in which he was charged with sexual assault and false imprisonment. Criminal charges were dropped the next year after his accuser decided not to participate in a trial, and in 2005 he settled a civil lawsuit out of court with no admission of guilt. Kobe Bryant's cultural footprint extended well beyond his own basketball career. He won an Oscar and a Sports Emmy for his animated short film Dear Basketball. He was a vocal supporter of women's basketball in particular, and clearly had many plans as an ambassador for the sport, as an entrepreneur, and as a philanthropist. He was also deeply beloved by the crowd at Sunday night's Grammys, and tributes poured in all through the night. His jersey popped up in several performances, and his memory was evoked in the opening remarks by the Grammys host, Alicia Keys.
Los Angeles, America, and the whole wide world lost a hero. And we're literally standing here heartbroken in the house that Kobe Bryant built.
Now, here's where I want to bring in Anastasia. Kobe Bryant's death wasn't the only thing casting a shadow over this year's Grammy Awards. And as we mentioned in the intro, the Recording Academy is facing a number of allegations from its suspended president and CEO, Deborah Dugan. Anastasia, could you walk me through those allegations?
Sure thing, Stephen. They are complicated, they're messy, and they are changing on what seems like a daily basis. But in short, Deborah Dugan was named in August as the president and CEO of the Recording Academy, which is the public nonprofit organization that gives out the Grammy Awards. She was also the Grammy's first female leader, and her appointment came as kind of a corrective. It was widely seen as a corrective for an organization that had been widely criticized as being out of touch, undiverse, leaning towards voters and Grammy winners who are too old, too male, too white, and just too insular. A couple of years ago, her predecessor, Neil Portnow, caught a lot of heat. He said after the awards that women in the music industry needed to step up, quote, step up, in order to be recognized in the business. So her appointment kind of came as a feeling of a new day at the Recording Academy. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty short-lived. Just 10 days ago, she was suspended. there's an investigation into an allegation that she bullied a woman working at the academy, an executive assistant, a female executive assistant to her predecessor, Neil Portnow. And Dugan has told NPR, and she's also said this in a complaint she filed with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, that she found the woman's work lacking. She says, Dugan says, that she was placed on leave as retaliation for allegations she made and changes she proposed at the academy.
Can you walk us through the allegations that Deborah Dugan made?
Sure. She sent a memo to Human Resources at the Recording Academy back in December. They included some very serious stuff. She said that she had been sexually harassed by the Academy's general counsel and a board member named Joel Katz, and Katz denies these allegations. She also, in that memo, accused the Academy of mishandling millions of dollars, self-dealing to members of the board and law firms associated with the board. She accused the Grammy voting of being rigged. And just earlier this week, on Tuesday, she filed a complaint with the EEOC in which she reiterated her accusations against Katz. She said that she learned that her predecessor, Neil Portnow, had been accused of raping a female artist and Grammy member. Portnow has said in a statement that he was investigated and exonerated, and of course denies the rape allegations as well. Dugan also, in that complaint, repeated and elaborated on her accusations about financial expenditures and rigged Grammy voting and self-dealing. She also accused the televised ceremonies producer 40 years, Ken Ehrlich, that he holds undue influences over the nominations for the high-profile Grammy categories like Best New Artist and Song and Record of the Year and Album of the Year. Ken Ehrlich has denied her accusations. So it's very, very messy, very, very complicated, and it really cast a real pall over tonight. And several people, including Alicia Keys, among others, made references, passing references to it. And I'm not sure how many of that, quite how much of that was understandable to an audience that hasn't been paying very close attention, but it was a lot of coded language aimed at people in the room and at people in the business.
Yeah, the references that were made in the telecast seemed very vague. Let's hear a little bit of Alicia Keys.
We refuse the old systems. Feel me on that. We want to be respected and safe in our diversity. We want to be shifting to realness and inclusivity.
So those mentions happened, but if you didn't necessarily know about these scandals, you weren't going to learn about them in this telecast.
Yeah, totally. And like right before that part that we just played, she said, it's been a hell of a week.
Right.
And I think people who were watching were like, did she mean day? No, she meant week. And she meant very specifically this week and the Dugan allegations. I should say that like a lot of the other stuff floating around Dugan is Dugan's accusations that the Academy's board and its senior leadership have been very unwilling to diversify the organization. About 18 months ago, there was a task force made up of artists and also people in the business and outside of the business who came together to make some really big, sweeping, changing recommendations to how the Grammys work. They were headed and continue to be headed by Tina Chen, whose name might be familiar. She's the head of Time's Up. Mm-hmm. She was also an advisor to Michelle Obama and works pretty closely with President Obama as well. Dugan said that a lot of the recommendations were ignored or stonewalled by the Board of Trustees. And in the ensuing days, the now head of the Academy, the interim CEO, who's a songwriter named Harvey Mason Jr., who is also the chair of the board, has said, no, we're going to keep going with these recommendations anyway. And in fact, we're going to find a new diversity officer, chief diversity officer for the Grammys within the next 90 days. So the Academy is saying it has nothing to do with that. It's all about this accusation of bullying against Dugan. That all remains to be seen. This is very much still a story that is evolving. But talk about diversity at the Grammys is all wrapped up in this internal history and what's turned into a lot of internal strife.
Now, you mentioned vote rigging. That's a very, very serious allegation that calls into question the legitimacy of everything we're talking about, everything the Grammy Awards are. Can you speak to what those allegations are specifically?
Sure. So there's a lot there. And as you said, you know, it kind of gives question to the legitimacy of the awards, right? Because one of the things that separates the Grammys from other music awards, you know, like popular awards, is that this is supposed to be a peer given award given by musicians and creators to their peers, to their colleagues, right? That it, you know, songwriters, etc., are going to get the awards. So what Dugan is alleging, in part, because she has a lot of accusations, is that, for example, board members and even nominees get to vote in their own categories and sit in the room when nominations are made. That's one of the things that the Academy says does not happen, but Dugan says it does. And also Dugan says that artists and also people like artist managers who have a lot of financial gain to be made by being nominated and winning a Grammy sit on the nomination screening committees of the Grammys. So essentially, she's putting the entire voting process in doubt.
I highly encourage listeners to follow Anastasia's reporting. She's gone extremely in-depth on this topic. She's interviewed Deborah Dugan and Harvey Mason Jr. You can find her reporting at the NPR website, and I very strongly recommend it. We should note, in the interest of full disclosure, that Anastasia is herself a former Grammy voter, as well as a committee member in the field of best album notes. This was before Anastasia's time at NPR. We're talking, what, about a decade ago, Anastasia?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the actual Grammy winners, starting with Billie Eilish.
Yeah, who swept all of the big four categories, which is Best New Artist, Song of the Year, Record of the Year, and Album of the Year. And it's not for nothing, but she's the first female artist to ever sweep those four categories. The last time anyone ever did it was Christopher Cross in 1981, for you stat nerds out there.
Also good to know, guaranteed track record for long-term success.
It was a strange evening because going into the awards, it really looked like Lizzo had the potential to have a huge sweep. I think she led the nominations for the entire year. Lil Nas X and Billie Eilish weren't that far behind her. But in the end, Lizzo only got a couple of the awards. And then this ceremony went on and on and on for hours. And then in the last few minutes, Billie Eilish took all four of the top spots.
Yeah, it did. As you said, Lizzo won the first award in the telecast for Best Pop Solo Performance for Truth Hurts, beating, among others, Billie Eilish. And earlier in the day, Lizzo won Best Traditional R&B Performance and Best Urban Contemporary Album. So they gave out 9 awards over the course of the telecast. 4 went to Billie Eilish, 1 went to Lizzo, the others went to DJ Khaled featuring Nipsey Hussle and John Legend, won for Best Rap Sung Performance, Dan and Shay won Best Country Duo Group Performance, Lil Nas X featuring Billy Ray Cyrus won Best Pop Duo Group Performance, and Tyler, the Creator, won Best Rap Album for Igor.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that Tyler seemed really ambivalent about winning for a Best Rap Album, too. Mm-hmm. He seemed to indicate that he thought it would be much more comfortable in a pop music category. And that kind of calls back to this real struggle the Grammys has had with Black music and traditionally Black forms and Black artists, that there's been a lot of criticism that they subvert those artists into these side categories that have a big box around them saying that you're Black, then you belong here. Right. And that sort of this tonight kind of calls back to that in a really uncomfortable way. You know, if you think a few years ago about Beyonce and Adele, and you think about Kendrick, and you think about all these artists who have not quite gotten the shine that people might have expected, it may feel, maybe not Tyler's album in particular, but it sort of raises a lot of those same questions. And this is exactly the kind of stuff that the Grammys are struggling with when it comes to inclusivity and diversity.
This is a fine time for us to talk about performances and moments that we liked and didn't like. What were some of your highlights?
I have to say there were some really, really on point performances tonight. Lizzo starting out was incredible.
Agreed.
She brought everything tonight. I liked Billie Eilish. We can talk about that. Maybe that wasn't such a thing. I thought that Rosalía did a great job of introducing who she is, yeah, and what she's all about this evening. I never fathomed that traditional flamenco would get that much time, mm-hmm, during a Grammy telecast, but here we are. And, you know, and there were big moments, too. Like, Lil Nas X looked thrilled to be on that stage and sort of, you know, looping and prancing around a rotating stage with BTS and Billy Ray Cyrus and Diplo and Mason Ramsey, who I did not know before tonight, but now I do. And Nas, like, these things would not happen on other stages, right, and that had kind of a lot of shine and sparkle to it. For me, though, the standout for the night was Lizzo. And anytime a flute comes swooping in, gliding like Peter Pan through the air to be delivered to the goddess that is Lizzo, that's okay with me.
Agreed on all counts, including on the Billie Eilish count. I thought she went very, very slow, kind of unexpectedly. Most of the other major nominees did medleys, but, yeah, but she didn't. Call me friend, but keep me closer. Call me back. And I'll go. But I still thought, you know, that was, among other things, a really fine vocal showcase. A few other performances I wanted to call out. I thought Demi Lovato handled the big emotional ballad with an emphasis on emotion. I thought that was a really powerful moment in which she was really overcome by emotion early in this song and then kind of came to life as it progressed. I thought that was beautiful. I thought the Nipsey Hussle tribute, you know, which was just a parade of people paying tribute to him, I thought a lot of that was really powerful. I agree with you completely about Rosalía and Lizzo. I thought Tanya Tucker had just a really great day and night in general. She won Best Country Song and Best Country Album and performed Ring My Flowers Now. I thought that was really nice. I thought Gary Clark Jr. had a really big, you know, day earlier in the day, and then late in the telecast performed This Land, and it was extremely powerful. Country, I told you there goes a neighborhood. And now Mr. Williams ain't so funny. I see you looking out your window. Can't wait to call the police on me. When I know you think I'm up to something. I'm just eating, I was still hungry. You know, it was a good night for performances, which was strange because it was such an emotionally ambivalent night, mm-hmm, otherwise. It made for a very strangely up and down evening for me. You know, there were just moments here and there that were very frustrating and odd. We've talked about a couple of them. I thought having Usher perform Prince songs, when you say, like, Usher is going to perform some Prince songs with FKA Twigs, and then you just have FKA Twigs dancing around and not performing vocally at all.
And that was just so strange because Usher has been sort of a mainstay of that sort of Grammy-ish set for, what, 2 decades, mm-hmm, now. And you, if you're going to perform Prince, you better show up and you better bring something new. That felt to me like
karaoke
mm-hmm.
with FKA Twigs dancing. And it was so strange. And I understand she's a very talented dancer, and that's a big part of who she is. But that just felt like dressing rather than part of real and organic and important in the set.
Yeah, and then late in the telecast, 3 hours and 32 minutes into the telecast, we get this performance of I Sing the Body Electric from Fame as presented as a tribute to Ken Ehrlich, who you mentioned earlier is swept up in some of this controversy. What did you make of that?
That was the point at which I was just begging for sweet, sweet relief and release.
Well, I guess we can leave it there. I am sure that those listening at home have many thoughts about Sunday night's Grammys. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Anastasia on Twitter at Anastasia T. Anastasia, thanks so much for staying up late with us.
Stephen, thanks for having me.
It is always a pleasure. Of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here on Friday when we will cover Bad Boys for Life.
What does it take to start something from nothing? And what does it take to actually build it? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on How I Built This, I speak with founders behind some of the most inspiring companies in the world. NPR's How I Built This, listen now.